Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
And welcome to a special bonus episode of the SJP Wrestling Podcast. This is episode 21, but as I said, it's a special bonus episode for everybody. This coming Thursday, we will have our usual episode out for release. Going into January, Royal Rumble season, expect plenty of Royal Rumble content and plenty of show reviews and lookbacks with various guests. However, on today's show, I am speaking with the head booker and co-owner of Coastal Championship Wrestling from Florida, Vinicius, the Brazilian Monster, currently managed by Bill Alfonso of ECW fame. It's a fantastic discussion, really interesting chat. It's one of the, I put it up there as probably one of my favourite interviews I've done so far. I really hope everyone enjoys it. I won't prattle on too long today before we get to the main topic with our guest, this being a bonus episode and so on. I just want to quickly say that if this is the first time you're listening to the show, or even if it's not and you simply haven't done it yet, please go and find the show on Facebook and Twitter at SJP Wrestling Pod. Check us a follow and let us know what you think, and if you have any suggestions for guests or topics for us to discuss or pay-per-views you'd like us to go back and look at, please let us know. Okay, that's enough from me. I look forward to hearing from you all on the show's social medias, again, at SJP Wrestling Pod. I hope you enjoy this bonus episode, and I'll speak to you on Thursday. As always, thank you for listening. I am over the moon to welcome Coastal Championship Wrestling co-owner, executive director, the Brazilian destroyer himself, Vinicius, to the SJP Wrestling Podcast. How are we doing, sir?
Wow, a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much. I'm doing great. I'm in the sunny state of Florida. There's very little COVID restrictions. Things are kind of crazy. How are you doing up there, man? How are you doing in the Harry Potter world? You're at Hogwarts today, right?
Yeah. Where we are in Gloucester in the UK. That's where the Harry Potter films, certain scenes were filmed in our cathedral. It's probably about maybe 15 minutes walk from my front door. So that's quite nice. But we've just come out of a second lockdown. We're still under certain restrictions, and we have like a tier system in the UK now, depending on how many infections are rising or going down. You have different restrictions depending on which tier you're in. We're in tier two. So we're still fairly restricted. Yeah. But it's better than it was, say, a week or two ago.
And it's horrible. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, it's horrible to get this, the idea of getting these lockdowns. Like, you have to get a happy medium, right? Like, you don't want people to go crazy, but at the same time, this is a real virus. This is a very strong, intense virus. And I think people, you know, some people, they downplay it, but it's intense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's insane how it has to, but it's insane how it's changed the world, everything. I mean, even down to before I started speaking with you today, I've had to go to the shop and then go pick my youngest daughter up from school. And even things like that I would do most days are completely different to how I've experienced them in my previous 30-odd years on this planet. It's completely changed even the simplest of tasks. Hopefully, at some stage, we'll see a proper end to it soon and we can return to some normalcy. But with regards to the whole COVID, coronavirus, and so on, we'll start talking from a show's standpoint, I suppose, and a personal standpoint too. How has that affected you as a promoter and also on a personal level?
Man, on a personal level, my father received it, my stepmother, and all my brothers all got COVID-19, and
oh wow,
you know, thank God, they were all okay, you know, very mild symptoms. My little brother, oddly enough, the youngest one, he had the worst symptoms, you know, very difficult to breathe, he got pneumonia, you know, but he was never thank God he was never at a state where he was afraid to lose his life. It is a horrible thing. It really is a terrible thing, personally. And I've seen you know, people with it. It's a terrible thing. Business wise, it's been incredibly difficult. It's been incredibly difficult to run a health studio, a health facility, which is, you know, at its bare bones, what Coastal Championship Wrestling is. You know, we train professional wrestlers here. Obviously, we run monthly shows. We have a weekly show. We run a lot of stuff. And when there's very little in terms of gathering for about 6 months from March, you know, until a few months ago, there was very little in terms of public gathering, and health studios unfortunately had to close. So, you know, it was difficult because the landlord still needed to get paid, you know. When we don't have our tuition fees coming in, it was a little bit difficult, but we were able to ride it out. And now, you know, Florida, we joke, we call it like the Petri dish of the United States. You know, it's like, here, we're the guinea pigs. Like, let's see how many people are going to die in Florida first and see, you know, like, let's open up and get things going, which is good and bad, you know, good for business and just bad, might be bad in general. You know, we don't know the full effects forever. That being said, you know, we're back. And obviously, we still have different types of precautions that we've had to do and put in place. But it's kind of ridiculous in the beginning. You know, early stages of March when this virus was happening, you know, we banned handshakes. You know, in professional wrestling, the handshake is incredibly important. You all come in, you shake each other's hand, look mm-hmm. each other in the eye, and you say hello, because it's, you know, it's partially like, hey, I'm here to do business. Let's work together. And also that you don't have any animosity towards the people. That's why you do those type of things. And then we realize, yeah, we're not going to do any handshakes, but we're going to get in the ring and sweat on each other. So unfortunately, we decided at that moment we're going to have to close.
But, yeah, you know, that's a bit of a contradiction, isn't it? You can't yeah, shake hands,
exactly,
but like, at the same time you're picking each other up and rolling around each other. It's a bit crazy.
Yeah, it's like, here, I'm not gonna handshake you, but I'll definitely headlock you, and I'm gonna put you in my armpit here for a few, you know, for 10 seconds. So, but then, what's crazy is, and I don't know, you know, good how you see it, good or bad, how anybody sees it, but the state of Florida and the state of Tennessee, you know, they opened up pretty quickly. So we do run shows. We just ran a show with obviously mask required, social distancing, breaking chains last Saturday. That was a great success. We do some live tapings with tapings for our show, a live wrestling, which is a studio show. And we obviously, everyone is temperature checked. All the wrestlers before any show are, they take a COVID-19 test. So they do have to submit a negative test to us. So we know that the performers don't have COVID-19, but I mean, you can't ask an entire audience of people to provide a negative test. That being said, you can just try to do as many safety precautions as humanly possible. I personally I test myself every single week because I do spend a lot of time with wrestlers. I do spend a lot of time in business, you know, talking to people and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to do the best that I can, but you know, there of course you wake up every day and you could get it. Anybody can get it. So it's an interesting process. It's a different process, you know, and there are other promoters in New York City who don't think it's fair that Georgia and Florida and Texas can run shows and can grow. You know, we've had a lot of spotlight onto our company. You know, we had a match in Tennessee. We had a show in Tennessee, and in Tennessee in the United States, there's a what's called a no mask mandate. It's a very freedom state. So people are telling us at the door, look, our governor says you can't force us to wear a mask. And it's like, please, please, wear a mask. So we had about 300 people there with Sabu and Alex Ocean, and there were some people very upset that, you know, a huge majority of people in the audience, of course, were wearing masks. A huge majority of people were. We were giving away free masks at the door, and between every match, we were asking, please, please wear a mask, please social distance. But we see the chairs scooting closer. We see the people taking their masks off, you know, so it's a very difficult thing. And I think it's going to be something with professional wrestling in the future over the next year, over the next 2 years, is, of course, you can tell people, hey, get out, leave. You know, it's our right to tell them, leave. If you're not going to wear a mask, you can go, you know, and we're gonna have to play with that. But we're also going to be in a situation where, hey, if you're not vaccinated, you can't come to a big show or something like that. It's gonna be interesting for promoters and professional wrestlers alike. But I think the most important thing is that if you're working together with another wrestler, you need to be tested. You need to make sure that you are not going to be the one spreading the, you know, spreading the virus. It's just going to be difficult. And for independent wrestlers, you know, there's no governing body to make sure, you know, WWE, All Elite Wrestling, they have a governing body who can test every single person on site or whatever. But when I'm running shows, I know that I'm going to use Sabu, who before us was at the GCW show or another show that I know that there were some positive tests. And we asked Abu to give us a negative test, but it's hard. It's whose responsibility is, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And I suppose, like you said, with the more independent companies or independent wrestlers, I guess for want of a better term, they are bumping from company to company, venue to venue, state to state, seeing a broad scope of fans, and a potential there for moving things around the country is higher, I guess. I mean, you mentioned there about the WWE and AEW. How do you think they have dealt with the whole COVID situation with regards to having WrestleMania behind closed doors, very odd atmosphere, and then now this Thunderdome invention they have, AEW having people around the outside of the ring for quite a little while now. How do you think they've dealt with it, and how do you think it's affected watching the shows?
I think it's wonderful. It was a little weird at first, right? I mean, when you're watching WWE, when it was just out of the Performance Center and WrestleMania and that type of stuff, I think it was a little strange. And I think they have incredibly smart minds working on it. So I think both of them did a great job. I prefer the Thunderdome because it's like, wow, they tried something new, interesting, you know, different. Yeah. You have these big screens, you know, and then, and you know, the audience is not there. Like when you watch American football, for instance, when you watch American football, they sweeten the audience. So when the home team is, something happens to the home team, that you hear the boos and whatever. At first it's a little strange, of course, because it's not real human beings, but then you kind of get used to it. And the same thing has started to happen in the Thunderdome. And I think they've done also a good job of whoever's doing that. I don't know who's doing the actual sound effects, you know, when that process is actually happening. I don't know, you know, who or what, but they've gotten better. And then in regards to All Elite Wrestling, they also did a great job. I like I said, I prefer the Thunderdome, but I love the fact that you see sometimes a reaction from Colt Cabana, or you see a lot of independent wrestlers from Florida. You see them there reacting, doing their thing. And it's kind of cool. There's kind of a cool aspect to it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Thunderdome, I think visually it's incredible. When you see what they can do as well, not just with all the faces around the ring, but when people are making their entrances and the screens then become part of their entrance display, I guess, with lighting and so on. I think it's incredible. But I watched the NXT show. I mean, the day of recording here, NXT War Games was last night. I watched the War Games show here in the UK this morning. And the where they record the NXT shows, it's almost got a Thunderdome effect with the screens, but it's smaller and it's flat. And I really liked that as well. That felt quite edgy, whereas the Thunderdome itself seems very bright and polished and very WWE-esque, I guess.
Right. Right. And I think with we're going to see it at Tropicana. What WWE is going to do something else, you know, when they move to Tropicana Field, it's going to be like, that's the type of stuff. Like when you need innovation. I didn't watch War Games yet. I love War Games. I prefer that if they'd have a top on that cage, right?
Oh, I was saying the same thing to my wife this morning.
It's like, man, like I understand they want to do spots on top of the cage, and I understand with the way that they use the jib cranes in regards to the video, so you want better angles and whatnot. But man, there's something about War Games when you actually have the top of the cage on there, and I love it so much. And it's all about innovation, I guess. You know, some innovation, like removing the top of the cage, some people are not going to like, maybe like an old school wrestling fan like you and I. And then there's some things that, you know, hey, let's get weird, let's get different, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was having a very similar conversation with my wife earlier when we were watching the War Games show. I won't give any spoilers, don't worry. I'll very much keep my gob shut if you haven't seen it yet. But I was saying to my wife Sharon then, I wish there was a roof on top, because that's what I grew up watching and that's what I loved. And I don't like it when they change things. But then literally in the very next breath, I'm saying, I like the cages on top of the ramp, though. They're new and they're good.
Right.
Yeah, so
right,
I'm sort of contradicting,
exactly.
I'm sort of contradicting myself. But it's I mean, speaking there, you say there about being quite old school minded with regards to war games. Where initially did you, as a youngster, as a child, discover this crazy world of pro wrestling? What first,
so
what
I remember,
first was drawn to you?
I remember the moment that I always joke, like, this is when I actually became a professional wrestler. And I think it's funny because I used to always tell people my first memory was hating Ric Flair when Ric Flair brought the real world title, where Bobby Heenan was a real, and I was maybe, I was 3 years old, I think. I was, might have been 4 years old.
1991, that would have
92,
been.
92, beginning of 92. But you know what? I do remember my actual first ever experience was that Survivor Series, and then watching Tuesday in Texas, an uncle of mine, because, I mean, we didn't have any money for pay-per-view as a kid. So an uncle of mine's like, you know, Survivor Series. I must have seen something with Hulk Hogan on it because I was enthralled by that. But I got to see the Survivor Series. Literally the first time I see Hulk Hogan wrestle, he loses. Ric Flair puts the cage, puts the chair underneath, and then he wins it back on Tuesday in Texas. They strip the title. That was, to me, at that moment, I started body slamming people. I was 4 years old, or maybe 3 and a half, and I was body slamming people, and I was elbowing people, and I was choke slamming people, suplexing people, and my brothers, my cousins, whomever, anywhere I went, I you know. And then as I got into other sports, as I got into, you know, I became a black belt in Taekwondo, and then I played American football, and then I was a power lifter, and obviously I did amateur wrestling all the way through college, you know, in competitive powerlifting. It was all because I wanted to be a wrestler, man. It was all you know, there was all, like, when I was an amateur wrestler, our coach would let us, he gave me a key to the wrestling room on Saturdays at the high school. So the janitors would let me in, and I would go and you know, three or four of my friends. And of course I was telling our coach, I'm really sorry, Mr. Somerville, Coach Somerville. I was telling him, yeah, we're going to, you know, we're going to go and we're going to do drills and we're going to, you know, amateur wrestle. And unfortunately, or fortunately, we got time to, again, like, practice suplexes and body slams and that type of stuff. So that was really when I first started, you know, and I knew I was always going to become a professional wrestling promoter. I knew I was always going to get in the business, but that was really when the seed was set. And then it was really after college, after I was working and, you know, kind of settling down, when it's, you know what, this is the time to do it. So, you know, Pablo Marquez, who former ECW, you know, former ECW, former WWE performer, he had a professional wrestling school. And I walked in and, he, you know, he showed me my first bumps. He showed me what to do. He showed me everything. So he's, you know, from there, it was just, you know, off to the races, basically. And then maybe 2 years ago, I saw Hugo Savinovich in an airport, just by luck. Pablo, right, and I were going to Colombia, and he saw me and he just said, you're not, you know, whatever your gimmick is, this is your real gimmick. And he went and he told me, you know, you're Venetius and you're the Brazilian powerhouse, you're a destroyer, and you don't pump for nobody, daddy. So like, from there, then that was just off to the races as well. So my whole professional wrestling process really started when I was 3 and a half years old, and it's continuing today, you know, with Coastal Championship Wrestling. There's a lot of great stuff that we're doing, and I have Bill Alfonso now on board full time for a 2-year contract as is, and he's going to be with me and helping the company and helping us in the foreseeable future until he decides he doesn't want to do it anymore, until he gets old, you know.
I see. I mean, so 3 and a half years of age, discovering Hulk Hogan, Flair, The Undertaker, and all that.
Bret Hart. You know, Bret Hart was the one where when Bret Hart won the title in 92, when he beat Flair in 92, I was so into the realism of what Bret Hart was trying to, like, he was a real
fantastic
wrestler.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you look at like everything he does, even throwing a punch, it looks.
Yeah.
It looks
no,
so,
I mean, I just, I make no bones about it. Like when I was training, I tried to do everything like Bam Bam Bigelow. I tried to punch like Bret Hart, drop a leg drop like Bret Hart, punch like Bret Hart, you know, but when you're 330 pounds, unfortunately, when you're 330 pounds, you can't wrestle like Bret Hart. But that being said, you know, You know, you just copy those guys. I'd love to. I wish, you know, I'm actually down a little bit of weight on during the pandemic. You know, I'm not eating out and I'm training harder. So maybe I'll get down to a weight so that I can learn how to wrestle like Brett. But he is, you know, like when you think about realism or like when he'll cut a promo, he's like, oh, my brother Owen, I'd never want to fight my brother and stuff. And it's like, wow, like, you know, as much as I love Ultimate Warrior's promos or Hulk Hogan's promos, Brett's very underrated with the realism on the promo.
Yeah, and I think that's why Brett stands out to me as well. I can tell you a funny little story about Bret Hart, actually. Well, it's more a funny story with regards to my family. My wife, when she was little, was adamant Bret Hart was her dad. because my mother-in-law had just thought Bret Hart was wonderful, loved him to bits, and had the old, I suppose, Panini was the company that used to make the sticker albums, potentially. And right. She would have the picture of Bret Hart from the WWF sticker albums from sort of 1991, 92-ish. So my wife would have been 9, maybe, something like that. And she would carry it around in her purse because she thought Bret Hart was just the most wonderful-looking man on the planet, my mother-in-law. And she used to jokingly tell my wife that Bret Hart was her dad. And for a certain period of time, my impressionable young at the time wife believed it. So she went around for a little period of her childhood That's believing so that funny. Bret the Hitman Hart was her actual dad. Yeah, so but the realism
but have you read Bret's book? I mean, apparently he slept with someone in every city, so it's possible. I'm just kidding.
Did he ever wrestle in Gloucester? I don't think he did.
I'm sure at one point he had to have. Like,
I'll bring that up. We've done it.
See if you ever, look on Cage Match if you ever wrestled like Tiger Jeet Singh in Gloucester.
Yeah,
age appropriately.
Yeah. Okay, you speak there about as well. Starting the training process. I mean, how was that walking in for the first time? Were you nervous? Were you comfy because you were already doing quite a lot of sports? And the first bumps you took, how were they? Was it a shock to the system or did you straight away think, this is for me?
That's a great question. So a little bit of both. So okay. I had actually just stopped competitive weightlifting.
Why did you stop there?
Just because of the long-term effects on your joints,
and on your
body, you know, it's not good, really good for you. So then I decided that it was much better on your body to start professionally wrestling. It's probably the same, probably. So I came in and I'll always remember it, you know, Pablo Marquez, sitting there and then speaking to him. And, it was just such a wonderful conversation. We just talked about, you know, some of what our goals would actually be. And then it was the first bumps were, tough. The first bumps were tough, but I didn't feel what I've been told now that I've been doing it for, you know, a little bit. It's about like, first 3 months, your body needs to absorb and figure out what's going on. So okay. For the first 2 months, your bumps are, you're going to feel like crap every time, you know, and I did feel the soreness. I felt a soreness in different muscle groups, you know, like obviously, you know, I'm used to my pecs, my hamstrings, my quads, different, you know, some different stuff on a daily basis. But the muscle groups that you suddenly start to reach when you're actually professionally wrestling are very different than anything else that you can do or want to do and whatnot. So the truth of the matter was I thought the transition was perfect for me, but that's very, very rare. I've only seen a few, like I've only literally seen a few people like not have problems. Like, oh man, why does my neck hurt? Why does my back hurt? Why does my lower back hurt? You know, early on in my training process or fairly early on, it's really when I started doing matches, I broke three of my ribs in my back. And I worked through it for about 3.5 weeks. And then I re-injured them. I thought I'd broken them on a really simple bump on a very bad ring. And I went to the hospital and I was informed that they had been broken for 3 weeks, that we can give you some painkillers and, you know, you're going to have to wait a month. And I wrestled through that month. I wrestled through my dates. I wrestled through my training and whatnot. So sometimes you just have to – just get through it. You know, of course there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. Like if I ever tear an ACL or a shoulder, of course there's nothing you can do. But if it's something like a broken rib or bruises and stuff, some guys take off for weeks and sometimes it just happens, right? It's professional wrestling. It's not ballet. I was in the ring with Brian Cage 2 days ago, Saturday. And he was showing us some insane drills, and I was dying. And a great wrestler, Bugs Moran, Alex Horace, comes to lock up with me, and he's exhausted at this point because we're trying to keep up with Brian Cage, and that's
right. Okay,
we're not machines, and he is, so we're both exhausted. But he was particularly exhausted. He comes in to lock up, and he punched me in my face, like directly in the face, and it appears he may have broken my nose. But there's nothing I'm gonna do, you know, like. It happens. I'm not going to blame him for breaking my nose. And I'm not going to skip training tonight because of the same thing, you know. It's professional wrestling. But it does take time. So if you're just starting this 3 months, give your 3 months, take your 3 months, and do the best that you can with it.
Yeah, I suppose it's for want of a better term, conditioning your body to be used to throwing yourself on your back and so on, because it's not something that most people would be used to doing. And also with regards to you say about hurt and injured, the differences there. I'm guessing everyone draws the line somewhere different, don't they? And you'll need to get the balance right, because there's one thing, I suppose, working hurt. But if you're doing yourself long-term damage by doing that, that must be a concern going forward as well, surely.
Right, yes. There's a bump card. And we were joking again. We were joking Saturday, and Brian Cage doesn't have a bump card. Oh, he actually says he does now. But like a guy like Brian Cage, he's like, oh, you know, what are you gonna do? He's gonna do 20 things, and he's gonna go as hard as he possibly can, because, you know, he's amazing, right? But a guy like me, you know, I was 340 pounds. I think I'm down to like 295 pounds. Don't tell Fonzie that, because I'm still this big 300 pound monster. But a guy like me, and a guy like, you know. In your early 30s, you know, like you can't keep doing as much. And I think Brian kind of, it's one of the things he told me was, or told all of us was, you know, you do have a bump card. Just don't, you know, go crazy. But that being said, we have to train. You know, I'm not the first time I do a particular move, it shouldn't be in the match. So you have to go and train. You have to do do your best stuff. And then when you're working 3 days in a row, remember that, you know, if you're going to be doing something on Saturday, don't kill yourself for Sunday. You know, as many times guys have had to cancel a date because they did something risky or dumb on Friday, and then they had to cancel the date on Saturday. Just be careful, you know. That would be my advice in that situation. But long term, yeah, you know, my business partner Dan Ackerman, he wrestled for Phi Delta Slam, and he was a tag team guy in Memphis, and a lot of times even enhancement guy in some spots and in some places. But you can tell he's a, you know, the way he walks, there's that wrestler walk, you know. We spent some time with Mick Foley last year, and you don't realize that he's 6'4" because he's hurt. You know, and he's a tall, big, monstrous dude. Like he, I get it. You know, like that's why, you know, he deserved where he got, not just for being a great wrestler, but he has a physical, he's an imposing physical presence. But when you see him, he's always hunched over because he's hurt, you know? So you don't want to get to that part, but that's, it comes to like transitioning yourself out of the business. Like if you're a full-time, a professional wrestler and you're working, you always make sure that you're ready to transition when you're able to, so you don't have to wait too long. And that goes to guys who are famous and booked and stuff like that. You know, it's hard to say no. If AEW tells Sting that he needs to wrestle next week, he'll do it, you know, and he'll wrestle. It won't just be six man tags or whatever. Like Sting will wrestle, because, you know, even though he's 61 years old, even though he has neck problems, they still want to wrestle. I don't know what he, you know, maybe he's financially set for life. I don't know Sting's financial thing, but it's hard, you know. But I promise you, no one's going to be asking me to wrestle when I'm 52 years old. It's our decision, you know. So it's just, you know, it's different if The Undertaker wants to wrestle once a year for, I don't know, $1 million. I don't know what the numbers are, but or if I want to wrestle for, you know, $100, it's very different, right?
Yeah, definitely. After your training process, then, and you start having your first matches, Where did that start? Where did it get to a stage where either you or your trainer or colleagues decided, okay, we're ready for this now, you're going on to the show? And how was that? Of your memories of that first match, was that a different set of nerves, or were you confident enough because of the training you had?
Man, that's a great question. I was outside the ring doing like a timekeeper thing. It was very, very early in the process, and I just had a black shirt on. And it was a match with the Puerto Rican tag team champions. It was Super Gladiator and Ricky, what's his name? Puerto Rican tag champions. The guys are jacked. And a gentleman was in the ring and took a double choke slam. It was like the opening spot of the match, takes a double choke slam, and he breaks his right arm.
Oh.
And my coach turns to me and he goes, here, just get in there. Well, okay. So I'm wrestling for the Puerto Rican Tag Team Championship.
In your debut.
In my debut, and nobody knew who I was. I'm going to look on Cage Match if it's just who I'm billed as. But I jump in the ring. I start forearms to the back of Super Gladiator. He no-sells me and turns around confused. I push him. He looks at me like, what is going on? And then I go for a clothesline. He ducks it, punches me. We go to the corner. And then one of them, I forget, man, he spine buster, and he's trying to tell me what to do next. But I couldn't understand because his accent was so heavy. So I just kept feeding and he kept punching me. I mean, he took like seven bumps in a row, just punch, 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 punch. Finally, he grabbed me and threw me in the corner, tag. And then it was so funny because obviously I'm so confused. Everyone's asking me if it's a work. Like the wrestlers are saying, was that a work? You know, we don't win the tag team championship, unfortunately. And we go to the back. And one of the Puerto Rican guys starts telling me, like, no, that's not how the finish was supposed to go. We were supposed to do this sequence, and you were supposed to beg, and you were supposed to do something. And I'm looking at him and I'm saying, do you not remember? I was not the participant in the match. You broke his arm. I don't, like, through osmosis, was I supposed to figure out what exactly the finish was? It was wild. It was really, really intense. And it was fun. It was really fun. It was such a rush. And my tag team partner, Jeff Crean, Johnny Walker, he turned to me and he was like, you know what? He's like, this is professional wrestling. You did it. Like, you did a great job. You didn't, you know, and since that day, I earned his respect. You know, previously, before that, I hadn't. I didn't have his respect before that. So, you know, that wasn't my big debut. And then months later, I did come in, work some matches as like a big jock bully, and then work a little bit under a mask and stuff like that. But that my real first debut was, you know, Pablo Marquez saying, hey, just get in there. and I tell people that now, like, you never know what can happen. You never know when these things can happen.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the amount of people I speak to for the show who say that they were just at a venue and they had their gear and were given an opportunity or whatever. And you know, sort of opportunity knocks, I guess, is the phrase, isn't it? With regards to that, then, I suppose if you weren't expecting to work and it's literally a momentary decision like that, a snap decision there and then, I suppose you would have had time to get nervous, I'm guessing. Were you just on autopilot?
That's so true. Yeah, you know, I remember I was my attention span. I hate to say it, but I remember I was kind of like zoning out. And then I what kind of kicked me right back in was the double choke slam, because it looked weird. Obviously, it looked weird. He landed on his arm. His arm broke. Mm. And then yeah, it was weird. And then, yeah, exactly. And then I look at Coach and he's like, get in. And it's exactly no nerves. A little bit of nerves for a second.
Yeah.
But, you know, that I remember thinking I'm on the apron before I get in. Oh, and the reason why Super Gladiator didn't sell my forearms was he told me, he's like, I thought you were like the doctor. I thought you were a medical doctor. He's like, I thought the ambulance had come, because the ambulance was getting to come. He's like, I thought that the ambulance had come and they were helping the wrestler set his broken arm. And then he's like, I thought the ambulance guy started clubbing me in the back. So I was like, he's like, and then when I saw you in the match, I was like, wow, like the doctor was in the ring. I was like, it was so funny. But yeah, I remember thinking like, should I take my shirt off? Because I was just wearing black shirt, black pants. So should I take my shirt off? And it's like, you know what? Just go do it. And it worked out fine.
I mean, when you finish, that you must have been full of adrenaline, floating on cloud nine, absolutely buzzing, surely.
Yeah, my first match was for the NGCW Puerto Rican Tag Team Champions. You know, like, who knows what could have happened? I could have won the thing, you know? Like, I wasn't ready, but I could have won. Who knows, you know, anything could have happened. Someone else could have broken their arm, and we would have had to go over, and I would have been the Puerto Rican Tag Team Champions on my first match. But it didn't, unfortunately.
Anything can happen, can't it? you got one guy there sending you in to wrestle for these tag team championships. You got another guy there who thinks you're here to potentially, you know, conduct an operation. You know,
exactly.
You're an opponent or a doctor. No one's quite sure. Yeah, that's great.
I love it.
So you then say, you know, you worked a few other places, sort of went around a few different companies and so on, got a bit more experience. How did the whole situation now with Coastal Championship Wrestling come about? Did you work for them before?
Yeah, no, they were my home company. Always okay. Had been my home company, and just working with them, and there had just been some changes, and I knew since I was 4 years old that not only did I want to become a professional wrestler, but I also wanted to become a promoter. I wanted to promote shows in professional wrestling, and they had always known that intention. They were always incredibly helpful. Like, not only was I always trained to become a professional wrestler, but I was being trained to understand what, you know, what draws, what ticket sales, what's going to happen here, what do you do before the show and stuff like that. I was always there early. I was always there working with my mentor, Pablo Marquez. Like, I was always working with him, and he would kind of, you know, even when I was new, he would speak to me through the entire process. So, you know, when the great Sasuke needed to be picked up from the airport, I was going with him. When, you know, not just to meet the guys, but also just to be there and observe the process. So I was always, it seemed like for a long time, I was always kind of involved in the negotiational aspects of professional wrestling. So, you know, he was training me in that aspect, and there had just been some changes. So, you know, about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, there was an opportunity to, you know, become part of Coastal Championship Wrestling. So I think it was a natural fit. It was always, it was good, you know, it was better than for me to go and start a new promotion. You know, Coastal Championship Wrestling has been the patriarch of professional wrestling in South Florida for almost 18 years now. It's going to be 18 years in 2 months. So there's a fully functional, wonderful professional wrestling school that brings in amazing talents like Brian Cage last week, Robbie E on Robert Stone on a regular basis. You know, we have lines to all major companies, you know, just because we're here in Florida, not just because we're here in Florida, but because we've been in Florida for 18 years. And we have a lot of positive stuff happening. So it's always good that, you know, we're the type of wrestling school where it's like, look, if once you're actually, you know, ready, you will get a look, you'll get a look from some of those big companies. So it's always been successful. So why wouldn't I want to just come in and be a part of such a successful brand and help to grow the brand, as opposed to, you know, starting over the entire process?
Yeah, of course. And it's brand recognition, isn't it? It's a known name. It's a known, again, I suppose we've used the term quite a bit there, but it's a known brand in that area, isn't it? And recognized all over. I mean, you mentioned there about links with bigger companies and so on. I suppose we're jumping a little bit ahead of ourselves. I've got a few more questions to ask, but there was potential opportunities when WWE was running its Raw Underground segments.
Yes.
For people to go straight from working with yourselves to there. And I believe, was there a discussion on potentially you going as well?
Yeah, so it's funny you said that. Yeah, so Marina Tucker, former CCW Women's Champion, she was featured heavily with Shayna Baszler at Raw Underground. Okay. We had multiple guys who had went through medicals and were, you know, whether it was going to be Raw Underground or enhancement talent for NXT. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, but we had certain dates, you know, scheduled that unfortunately due to, I believe the decision was a complete separation of the brands. So to not have NXT and WWE and Raw and people mix with each other in hopes mm-hmm. to potentially isolating any future COVID issues.
Which makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it broke my heart, brother. Imagine this. So on the same weekend where I was going to go up to do that, I had a match scheduled in Mexico City with Dr. Wagner Jr., a Mexican legend. He's amazing, right? Probably the biggest profile match of my life in Mexico City at a kind of open air convention. So in previous years, there were 10,000 people. Who knows how many people would come to the show because of COVID-19. But on that same weekend, that weekend, I had to change my flights because of, some work. In Orlando, for WWE potentially. And I change the flights. I'm excited. And then those dates are canceled due to the whatever happened with the separation of brands. And then that Saturday, the Dr. Wagner Jr. match also canceled because Mexico City did not want to have so many people in it. So I literally that whole weekend, I was like, I sat around all weekend and I played with my newborn daughter, but I sat around all weekend and, I just imagined myself wrestling Dr. Wagner, or getting beaten to death by Braun Strowman on Raw Underground. I would have loved either one, man. So I just shaved my big beard. I thought it would have looked great if Braun Strowman just punched me in the face over and over again, like 30 times, but it is what it is. And the future will hold something else, new stuff. There's, we had Ariel Levy, one of our wrestlers, a great friend of mine. He's like a brother to me. He will be having his first AEW dates apparently coming up for AEW Dark and stuff. So who knows, who knows what the future holds, it is what it is. Good stuff happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously disappointing that one particular weekend with big opportunities sort of slipping away, I guess, through no fault of your own. But at the same time, other doors do open, don't they? I mean, and you also have legendary names from the business coming through the doors at CCW on a very regular basis, don't you? I mean, you mentioned Bill Alfonso is your manager.
Yeah, Bill Alfonso is a member of Coastal Championship Wrestling. He's a member of CCW. He comes and trains at the facility, and he is amazing. He has amazing knowledge, and he's a really great guy. He's a surprising guy. And then I wrestled Gary Wolf last Saturday for Breaking Chains, a pit bull Gary Wolf.
You won, didn't you? If I
of course, yeah. I'm 300 pounds, and I just overpowered him. Gary is he's a great guy, and he was a tough opponent. But of course, he couldn't match with the Brazilian destroyer, the Brazilian giant.
Benicio. Well, that's what I was saying, of course. also, Super Crazy. I've seen some of your shows, your YouTube shows. I saw Super Crazy on there.
Absolutely.
A big Super Crazy fan when you're coming through ECW, and you also had that weird lawnmower riding gimmick in WWE for a little while, but Super Crazy in ECW was fantastic. So how was it working with him?
It's unbelievable. Super Crazy is the salt of the earth. Like Super Crazy is a guy who, one of the difficult parts of running a professional wrestling promotion is like, are people going to promote? Are people going to put their stuff out there? Like, are they going to put a link to a live wrestling out there? Are they going to if it's a week that they're on their if it's a week that they're actually on the show? Yeah, of course they're going to put their link out there. They want to be seen. But if it's a week where it's matches that they're not on or there's no segment, if there's no promo with them on, are they going to promote or are they going to push and stuff? And Super Crazy is the guy that pushes whether he's on, whether he's not on. He posts pictures almost, every couple of days with him in the CCW shirt. He comes in 5-6 dates, a couple tapings. He's a CCW guy, and obviously it's due to a long brotherhood relationship with Pablo Marquez, obviously. So you have that type of link to these guys, obviously, through Pablo and through Dan's amazing connection. But a guy like Super Crazy is the salt of the earth, and he's the type of guy that you can get so much information information from, and the fact that he's willing to go in the ring and do anything. He doesn't stop you for a second and say no, I don't want to do this, and he will do anything. He'll try it. You know what I mean? Like if you tell him, hey, we're gonna we're both gonna go over the top Spanish fly to the outside onto a hardwood floor, he'll be like, oh, my friend, no, okay. he's like he's the type of guy who'll do whatever, and that's what you need, and he's not a young guy, but he's also not an old guy. He started really young, and he's a mainstay for live wrestling and for CCW. We'll definitely hopefully for the anniversary show, depending on how Mexico looks, You know, and for upcoming shows like Summer Glory and other things like that. I mean, it takes 1 second to say yes to Super Crazy on anything.
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it? Also, other names that have sort of come through the doors at some stage. I believe Rhodes passed through. Was it Dustin passed through at some point? Yeah,
the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes in 2005, 2006, 2007. There's a tag match. There's a three-way match, and he was all in for Coastal Championship Wrestling. He, you know, this was Dustin had left a World Wrestling Entertainment before he had gone to TNA, and Dusty was actually in the same situation. Dustin Rhodes was our world champion for a year and a half during that process before he had to leave us for Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. And Dusty was in the same situation, only I think he was going back to WWE I forget. I think he stopped at TNA and then obviously went on his way back to the WWE. But Dusty was always and has always been such a supporting force for Coastal Championship Wrestling. Obviously I never met him, but I know for Dan, you know, he was the type, like, particularly for Dan, he was the kind of guy who would give advice and, you know, tell us, you know, whatever. And, you know, the type of guy that, you know, obviously I'm too young to have been there in 2007 as well, but like, as a wrestler at least, but like, Dusty was the type of guy, I guess, who, when he walks in the building, he takes full control of his surroundings. Right. So he's like, okay, what's the book look like? What are we going to do tonight and stuff? So this was obviously secondhand stories, but it just sounded wonderful. And then everything that I hear about Dustin Rhodes, I've met him a few times, but not in working with him. I never worked with him. I never worked in the same company as him, obviously. But apparently he's the type of guy who will defend and will respect the guy who just started last week, the same way he'll respect the guy who, you know, who's been the NWA champion, like a guy like a Haggis, or, you know, when we bring in Sabu, like Dustin would treat Sabu the same way he would treat, you know, a new trainee in their first week. And that's the type of people you want around. And that's probably why he probably has a job for life everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic. You have so many great things about Dustin, don't you? All over, so much. I don't remember hearing a negative story about the fella at any stage in any company anywhere. And the fact that he's been around for so long and he's still performing to the level he is on a national,
he's or better now international, than he was 10 years ago. He's better now. It's insane.
Absolutely crazy. I suppose one more I need to ask you about quickly. You mentioned him there. Sabu, I mean, how often does Sabu come in and what's it like working with the guy?
Well, the idea for Sabu is twice a year, you know, do a Florida date and do another date. And this we knew it was going to be difficult last year. So we brought him in for CCW Halloween Hardcore Heaven. That was the show that I was telling you about where Tennessee doesn't mandate a mask. And it was a wonderful show. People are ready to go out to watch professional wrestling. We had a lot of people there in the building. And Sabu just wakes up like, it's great to always talk to him. He's such a good guy. He's a very like quiet guy. He's a very reserved guy, you know, kept to himself. And you're kind of looking at him and you're like, well, you know, I hope he's going to be okay tonight.
Right.
And then the music hits and it's Sabu.
Right. Like the flick of a switch.
Before the match, he stretches a little bit. Stretches his neck out a little bit, you know, gets a little bit of that blood flowing. And he had, I think, and I think it's Alive Wrestling episode 8 or 9. You can watch that match in its entirety. Sabu and Alex Ocean was one of the best hardcore death, whatever you want to call it. Was it a hardcore match? Was it a death match? Whatever you want to, it was spaced so well. Alex Ocean, he did so well.
I've seen this. I watched this maybe a week or two ago. And there was the traditional sort of Sabu spots, I guess, the leg drops with the chair and so on. And there, you know, there's plenty of blood and so on. But it was, there was a cheese grater as well involved.
Right.
I was sat with my wife again, watching that one afternoon. And I'm a big Sabu fan. So seeing Sabu, even at the more, shall we say, slightly advanced years. Was wonderful. Yes, okay. He may not be as quick as he once was.
Of course.
Yeah. But that's age. And the guy's, he's obviously going to be carrying a knock or two because of the style he works and what he's done to entertain people in the past. But it sent me back. I really loved watching that show, watching that match on your the YouTube show that you had on there. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And it, obviously that was one of our it was a great episode. And just one of the best matches, like, and maybe too, like you're sitting, I was standing, hiding, pretty close to ringside. And I saw that I was actually a little bit worried because everybody stood up. Every person in the building stood up and started walking towards the freaking guardrail. And I'm like, guys, you're literally huddling next to each other during a global pandemic. But it was also that feeling of like being a kid and just like looking up, and it's like, man, I loved Sabu. And, yeah, it's not exactly the same, you know. Of course, it's not exactly the same, but he's still a main event, amazing.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, and that again, that video of yours on your, we'll come to all your social media links and the YouTube channels and so on towards the end of the show. But yeah, that I can highly recommend people go out and watch all of it. To be honest, I think I've got maybe 2 episodes left to watch out of the ones you have.
Oh, great.
All the way through them.
Nice. And a new one this Tuesday with Roma versus Marina Tucker and Ariel Levy versus Hector Perfecto. That is you should not miss. So catch up before Tuesday, before tomorrow. So go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've enjoyed all of them. I highly recommend people go and have a look. It's great to see new content being produced by companies that aren't backed by billionaires. I guess it's great to see things still being done and done well by other people than the WWE, if that makes sense.
I appreciate that because that's exactly, you know, that's exactly what we wake up and we try to do, is like, you know, of course, like with a live wrestling, where it's 22 minutes. Here was the idea for a live wrestling: was Raw is 3 hours, and then AEW's 2, NXT's 2. So you have 9 hours of first run top professional wrestling. Then you have Impact, which is 2. And then you have Ring of Honor, which is 1. And then you have New Japan, which I get is a 1 hour show. But I can see sometimes, I mean, online I watch it too. But then I'm like, man, you know what's missing is just a quick show. Just watch a quick show that you can just like get in, get your angles, get your matches, and get out. And that's how live wrestling came to be. And I think it seems to be a success so far, but exactly what you said is like, you know, look, we're not the WWE, you know, we don't have billions of dollars. We're not Tony Khan. We're not Impact, you know, but we have something that we can put together and promote some different people. And yeah, you're going to see Super Crazy. You're going to see Sabu. You're going to see Bram. You're going to see Camille Brickhouse. You're going to see Marina Tucker. You're going to see Ariel Levy, who's one of the biggest movie stars in Chile, not professional wrestling star, one of the biggest movie stars in Chile. You're going to see him on our show. And it's different. So I you know, that's, you hit it on the head. It's a little bit of an alternative. You know, I have a low attention span. I was telling you, I was nodding off while watching professional wrestling. I was losing my attention span. And I think I wanted to put together and create a show that also is for people with a low attention span.
No, I understand. I mean, the thing with me is, with regards to professional wrestling, I suppose I've got the opposite. I've got a very big attention span. So when I've got
a lot of
shows that are fairly short, when I discovered it, or when you initially sent me the link when we first started talking a few weeks back, I literally just blitzed a load of them in one hit and loved it, and I had to go back and watch them again because I'd watched them all so quickly. Nothing really registered because I was taking it all in and enjoying it so much.
Great.
You know,
I love it. I love to hear that,
watch
man.
Them again. again, we mentioned various names there: Sabu, Camille Brickhouse, and so on, who have come through.
Bram,
CCW doors. But you've also got your training school there as well. And I think it's very important that we have a little look at some of the people who have come through your academy, who are in your academy now that you have high hopes for. Have you got any names or suggestions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of people
so
be looking at for the future?
Yeah, for sure. So today, if you're looking at today, Alex Ocean, the Neckbreak Kid, Will Austin, Agony, Charlie Ruffiani, who is – it's funny because you watch Agony wrestle and, you know, it's, you know, choke slam and big slams here and stuff like that. But you should watch him train because it's like second rope, moonsault, kip up, you know, like, and it's he doesn't need to do it because his character doesn't do it. But he's a guy who is just so talented. Pharaoh Johnson, who's, you know, 6'4" in his early to mid 20s, who can just talk. And then obviously Santos is one of the crown jewels. He went to, you know, he had interest from other companies from Ring of Honor. He had a WWE tryout. He had a lot of stuff going on for him, and he's always been loyal and have stayed with CCW for whatever his reasons were. He's always been, you know, around. And then, of course, our homegrown, our John Cena is Cha-Cha Charlie. Everybody loves him. Everybody loves his gimmick. But for 6 years at the CCW training facility, and now he is the most over babyface in Florida. He works every weekend at a different company in Florida, and he's, you know, a champion in multiple companies. And he's somebody who's just wonderful. And then you have he used to be a assistant trainer there. Jake St. Patrick was beginning to work with Evolve before Evolve left, and then he's back in the state of Florida. So you'll see him a lot more often. And the Jackal, you have Jackal, who is kind of fallen into an assistant trainer role now, and he is just wonderful. He's wonderful in ring, and he's very talented, and he's very funny. You know, he can come up with a funny vignette, but he can also have a wonderful, wonderful match. So, you know, those are the guys now. The crown jewels for CCW. You know, it's funny because, like, a guy like MVP was the second ever world champion, and when he talks about CCW, it was his beginning. You know, he had a lot of struggles, I guess, as a kid, and you know, CCW gave him a key to come train whenever he wants, and, you know, to come in on off days and all that type of stuff. And I think and he's mentioned it in many times that was an amazing moment for him, because it got him to the point where you see it. Like, if you watch Antonio Banks matches, MVP in CCW, if you watch his matches from the beginning, 2004, and closer to the end, near 2006, before he went to OBW, I think, or, you know, developmental, I think it was Deep South, or something like that, before he went to developmental, you see the transformation in his body, and you see his work, and, you know, his everything changed. So he's kind of, like, we joke, you know, he's the crown jewel. But there are guys that, you know, maybe because guys come in and guys go, and the new guys come and guys come back and that type of stuff. But someone like a PCW Ultra owner MLW Contra member, Joseph Samael, was Joey Machete, you know, and he had some previous training before CCW opened, obviously, but he was one of those early on guys that came into CCW and grew in CCW, trained there, all that type of stuff. So, you know, there are those guys from the early 2000s up until now, like, you know, so many guys have you know, come through the doors, and of course it's professional wrestling, so not everybody's going to make it. But if you look at past champions like Santana Garrett and other people like that who've spent some time, that just come through and worked at CCW, you'll see that, you know, the future is bright too. You know, we have 36 active students, you know, a lot of new guys coming in, and of course they're not all going to make it because professional wrestling is hard. Of course, some guys are going to quit. Some guys are not going to make it to their first match. You know, some men and women are not going to make it to their first match, but we have so many new people coming in that it's just, it's exciting. And it's exciting to see what the future is for Coastal Championship Wrestling, for sure.
Definitely. I mean, as we draw to a close here today, what I'd like to do as well is get you back on the show at some stage, maybe when COVID lifts a bit more, we can have a little bit more of a discussion about how it's going, booking the shows with regards to hopefully social distancing and all that relaxing a little bit. But yeah, I want to thank you hugely for your time today. I really do genuinely mean that. I've had a fantastic time talking wrestling with you. It's been a real eye-opener.
I should come back on, and we won't have to talk about CCW. We'll talk about me. We can talk about, like, current wrestling or something like that. I love talking about current wrestling too. Anytime.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I also enjoy looking back on old shows as well. Perhaps we can do something like that together.
I love it. Starcade 87 or Starcade 88. Anytime. If you haven't done it yet, you save it for me, dude.
We've not done a Starcade yet. We've not done a Starcade. We'll definitely pencil that in. Sounds good. Before I let you go, then, can you let everyone know where they can find you online on the social medias, and of course, most importantly, where they can find Coastal Championship Wrestling shows to watch on YouTube all over the world?
Awesome. For me, it's Venetius V, but I'm going to spell it out for you. On Twitter and on Instagram, it's Vinicious Fights. And that's on Instagram and on Twitter, Venetius Fights, but it's Vicious at the end. professional wrestling dude. And then you can find me anytime there. I'm super active on Twitter. I've got a ton of followers on Twitter, but I'm kind of growing the Instagram on there. And then, of course, for Coastal Championship Wrestling, the most important thing to do is to go to your YouTube right now, search Coastal Championship Wrestling, hit that subscribe button, and then you can binge all the Alive Wrestlings every Tuesday night. Another like quick, cool, interesting show for you to watch. You can see some new wrestlers, some old wrestlers, you know, guys who are at the tail end of the career and guys who are just starting their career. But you also have the Instagram CCW training facility, the Facebook CCW events, and then the Twitter CCWFL. Any of those places you can see cool stuff, pictures, information, you know, and we try to keep things light and funny. So, you know, things don't get too intense. So it's a simple follow, fun follow. You get to see the new women's champion Roma sitting next to the pool. And you also get to see Brian Cage training with us, videos of that type of stuff. And then, of course, training videos of ourselves, training videos of what we're doing here in CCW. So please, you know, follow us there, especially in the YouTube, especially Alive Wrestling every Tuesday, 7 o'clock.
Fantastic stuff, and I do highly recommend that people check that out. I've really enjoyed looking at these shows, again seeing the older faces, I guess, still going, and then the new faces coming through. I've really enjoyed each of those episodes I've watched. It's great, and it's right up my street. I mean, you also had the Genius on commentary, didn't you?
Yes, and he'll be back. He'll be back in 2 weeks on commentary. I love Lanny Poffo.
Yeah.
He's great. He hasn't used toilet paper in 30 years. You should just watch the episode 2 and he'll give you his explanation.
I must have missed that.
You have to. It's a throwaway line that like people will literally like, cause that was like, you know, 10 weeks ago. It's a throwaway line that I thought was so funny. And then literally people will call me like professional wrestlers who are finally catching up will call me and say like, did you hear the you left a Lanny line where he said he hasn't used toilet paper in 30 years? And then I said, yeah, I think it's hysterical. You know, he explains why he doesn't. So
I'm going to go back and check that light now.
Check it out. Yeah, I'll tell you.
No, again, Brazilian Destroyer, Vinicius, thank you very, very, very much for your time. I really look forward to having you back on. It's been great speaking to you. So thank you very much, sir. Have a good rest of your day.